Every stage of God implies a life challenge, which can be expressed in terms of highest aspiration. If you are surrounded by threats, to survive is a high aspiration. However, even in the worst situations, a person aspires to do more than cope. You might think that the next step would be escape. However, a child can't escape his family, just as famine victims often can't escape drought. So the mind turns instead to imitating God. And since God is a protector, we try to protect the most valuable things in life. Stage 1 is the most social of all the 7 worlds we will examine. Here one learns to be responsible and caring. The reward for learning to protect others is that in return, they give you their love and respect. Outright defiance is the worst response to a protector, who then feels completely justified in holding you to the letter of the law, just as Jehovah felt justified in punishing infractions of his law. It isn't hard to figure out what you have to do to survive in a harsh world. You have to show courage in the face of adversity. No amount of effort will totally appease this God. The courage to fight must eventually turn into the courage to oppose him. As in an abusive family, the devotee of a fearful God will not move on to a higher stage until he says, "I am tired of being afraid. You are not my God if I have to hide from your anger." As organized religions demonstrate, it is possible to live a long time with an angry, jealous, unfair God, even though he's supposed to be the highest judge. Ultimately, one must learn to live with ambivalence. The important issue is psychological. How much fear are you willing to live with? When this hurdle is cleared, when personal integrity is more important than being accepted within the system, a new stage begins. Translate this to an inner war, with one voice urging rebellion and the other threatening punishment for breaking the law, and you have the core drama of stage 1. You would think from the story of Adam and Eve that God's children were tempted to sin. But to me, the guardian wants you to obey. Therefore, he must make disobedience a wrongful act. God's temptation is to become a tyrant. Tyranny is protection that has gone too far. The tyrant, more often than not, has to be deposed, overthrown by force. In some societies, as in some families, this happens through violence. But short of violence, there is a subtler mechanism for escaping any temptation, which is to see through the need for it. In spiritual terms, God's protection is valued only by denying that he's also the source of the threat. In the end, nothing is outside the deity, so asking him to protect you from storms, famine, disease, and misfortune is the same as asking the perpetrator. The central question in stage 1 is this: why did God have to make such a frightening world? To get out of stage 1, you must arrive at a new interpretation of all the issues raised so far. Who is God? What kind of world did he create? Who am I? How do I fit in? In stage 2, the basic problem of survival has been overcome. Even so, the God of stage 1, like the reptilian brain, is a permanent legacy that everyone confronts before inner growth can be achieved. Stage 2, God the Almighty. Reactive response. If stage 1 is about survival, stage 2 is about power. There is no doubt that God has all the power which he jealously guards. At the beginning of the scientific era, when the secrets of electricity were being discovered and the elements charted, many worried that it was sacrilege to look too closely at how God worked. Power was not only his, but rightfully so. Our place was to obey, a view that makes perfect sense if you consider heaven the goal of life. who would endanger his soul just to know how lightning works? Freud points out, however, that power is irresistible. The kind of God implied by the drive to power is dangerous, but he's more civilized than the God of stage one. He is worshipped by those who have formed a stable society, one that needs laws and governance. The Almighty is not so willful as his predecessor. He still metes out punishment, but you can understand why. The wrongdoer disobeyed a law, something he knows in advance not to do. Justice is no longer so rough. The kings and judges who take their power from God do so with a sense of being righteous. They deserve their power, or so they tell themselves. The drama of power is based on the reactive response, a biological need to fulfill ego demands. This response has not been studied well. We can surmise that it is associated with the midbrain, which lies between the oldest animal structures of the old brain and the rationality of the cerebral cortex. Studies in infant development began to demonstrate that almost from the moment of birth, some newborns are outgoing, demanding, bold, and curious, while others are introverted, undemanding, and shy. These traits remain for life. This implies that the ego response is built into us. The ruling dictum of the reactive response is, "More for me." Taken too far, this leads to corruption, since eventually an insatiable appetite must run into the desires of others. We find no altruistic gods in world mythology. The first commandment given to Moses is, "You shall place no other god before me." Jehovah survives all competitors in the Old Testament. But in other systems, such as the Greek and the Hindu, the war for power is constant. The Judaic God is a surprising victor in his emergence from a small conquered nation that had 10 of its 12 tribes wiped off the face of the earth. Yet the subjugated Hebrews projected a stable, unshakable God, the first God Almighty to survive all challengers. Jehovah succeeded because he exemplified a world that was fast evolving, the world of competition and ambition.